It's time for our Thursday morning conversation. Yeah, lots of us are looking forward to the fishing opener coming up on this Saturday. And to talk fishing now, Steve Heiding is with us. And it's good to have him along here this morning. Steve, good morning. Thanks for being on the radio with us today.
Hey, Jeff, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, Steve, you've been part of our fishing guides here on the Big Q here for our fishing seasons. What is this, year number three or four for us going into this next year?
I believe this is year five.
Really? Boy, time flies, doesn't it?
Yeah, I still remember getting the call.
Yeah.
He asked me to do it, and I thought, well, this is cool. I wonder if I should do that, and here we are 5 years later.
You know what? It gives me a really good feeling when you're out and about at other events and you report on that, on your reports, that folks are hearing you on the radio, and that really makes me feel good. And so, Steve, you're a great part of our team here. We appreciate you a whole bunch, so thanks for doing this again this year.
Hey, glad to do it. It's fun, so I'm always looking for something fun to do, and I have a great time doing this.
Well, Steve, let's talk a little bit of fishing here. I grew up in the Fox Valley. Dad took us fishing all the time. We went up north. We went around the Fox Valley. The walleye run, the white bass run in Fremont was an annual thing. So I got the love of the outdoors and the love of fishing at a very young age, and that's one of the best things my dad ever did for me was introduce me to that. Where'd you get your start? Tell me the origin story of Steve Heiding's fishing career.
Well, my father had multiple sclerosis, and he couldn't take me fishing as much as I wanted to go. My grandfather stepped in, and he had a place near Crandon and on Little Rice Lake, and that's where I learned a lot of that's kind of where I learned how to fish, was fishing crappies and small northern pike on Little Rice, as well as the Wolf River. And to me, that meant everything, but there were lakes around. I grew up in West Bend, north of Milwaukee, and there were some lakes there that had pretty good bass fishing, and I tried to fish as much as I possibly could because I enjoyed it.
Yeah, fishing the boat with Grandpa was always a great thing, too. I don't know about you, but my grandpa bought every single lure that came out new, whether it got used or not. When he passed away, his tackle box was full of lures that never even got out of the packages. He always said he just bought it because it looked cool.
Yeah, I still have my grandfather's tackle box. You know, it's something I open it up about once a year just to look at it. You know, mostly he had crappie killers, which, you know, that's now we call them weighted flies. You know, pinky jigs.
Yeah.
I remember finding in like 1970, 71, somewhere in there, I found a Mr. Twister grub with a jig attached to it lying in the weeds alongside some lake I was fishing. And I looked at it, it was yellow, and I thought, you know, I could probably catch crappies on this. And I brought it up to Little Rice Lake with my grandfather the next time up, and, you know, I had one. And my grandfather looked at it, and, you know, it didn't have feathers on the back end, and I believe he called it an abomination. And then the first evening out with it, I outfished him 7-2 on crappies, which is the first time ever in my life that I had outfished my grandfather at crappie fishing. And so the next day we were driving into Crandon to try to buy more, but they didn't yet have them in the tackle shops at that time. So that was my introduction to modern-day fishing lures. You know, Grandpa liked his MEP spinners. He liked his creek chub pikey minnows, but, you know, for northern pike, but overall, he loved crappie fishing. He loved bullhead fishing. I learned to catch a lot of different fish species when I was a kid.
Yeah. From abomination to must-have in the tackle box overnight.
Absolutely.
Hey, speaking of equipment, let's get into a little bit of that. New equipment, it changes a lot. And, boy, talking about what our grandparents had in their tackle boxes and their boats compared to what we have nowadays, and everything has just changed so much over the years. So let's talk new stuff coming into this year. What's getting Steve Heiding excited about new equipment for this upcoming season?
Boy, you know what? St. Croix has the new Grasp 2 handle on their Legend Tournament muskie rods. This is, you know, when they came out with the Grasp handle, I wasn't entirely in favor of it. I didn't like it, but the more I used it, the more I learned to like it. Now that's pretty much all I'm using is the rods with the Grasp handle. But they had a number of guys still prefer the conventional trigger grip, and so the Grasp 2 handle now allows for, you can interchange the handle based on your preference. And that is, I mean, a fantastic innovation. You know, you just took a really great fishing rod it made it better, and it appeals to more anglers too. So that's been good. Otherwise, you know, musky wise, so far as baits, I picked up a handful. I went out looked for somebody, you know, a manufacturer making a globe type bait this year. You know, the Pfluger Globe is a famous old musky bait, and you know, I've got one retired in my and I've got a bunch of retired lures, and I've got one retired there that a gentleman gave to me 30, 40 years ago, and it has I still have the box too, and in pencil it says $1.89 up in the corner of that box. I don't fish with that, but you know, back during the pandemic, back in 2020, you know, it seemed everybody was up here fishing muskies at the time, and yeah, everybody, when they wanted to throw topwaters, a lot of guys seem to want to go with tail baits, you know, top raiders, fat bees, Dr. Evils, etc. And so I think the fish got really conditioned to that. So I started pulling out globes, and it was, you know, a couple of my old globes, and you can fish them just as fast and in the same situation as you could the tail props baits. And but they just, the muskies still ate the globes. And so I've got one left that has been chewed up considerably since 2020. So I went out and looked for one today or this spring, and I found another one. They aren't that common, but I would think that some manufacturer will really get going on it, because they still catch fish.
Yeah.
And big ones too.
What's old is new again, typically with a lot of different things in life. It goes away for a little while, but the good stuff always seems to find its way back. We're a little bit...
go ahead.
No, you finish your thought first.
Well, I was going to say bell bottoms are coming back in pants, and that's good.
No, that is a good thing. That can stay right where it was back in the old days. But yeah, I remember it seemed to me there was a time where I thought all globes were yellow.
Well, everyone, I've got one yellow one that really works well for me. And you know, my first topwater hit ever was on a black one. And that, you know, and when you look at topwaters, you really only need two colors. You need black, you know, for ultimate contrast, and then you need a bright colored one for during the day. You know, yellow or fire tiger or baby duck, whatever. That's all you really need.
And that, you know what, that goes for a lot of different species. If you're a topwater fisherman, you can take that rule and put it right up there at the top. And so when you get there in front of all those lures, sometimes it's a tough way to make a decision. But, yeah, stick to those basics, and that'll serve you very well. Steve Heiding, our Fishing Hall of Famer guide here on the Big Q, with us once again here this year, and here with us for our conversation this morning. Couple of things, other things on the water. Now, when everybody's going to be in a hurry to get on the water this weekend, that's for sure. Things kind of settle down a little bit as we get into the season, but everybody wants to be in their favorite fishing spot. So I'm curious. I was out on the river last weekend, and I came across something. I thought, when I talk to Steve on the radio, I'm going to bring this up and see what his thoughts are. Fishing etiquette, etiquette out there on the water, fisherman to fisherman, angler to angler. I want to talk etiquette. The first place that we wanted to go on the river was taken. Somebody was in our first spot that we planned on going to, and so we thought, okay, he won't be there for very long. He'll move along, then we can get over there. So we just camped kind of across the river, and I just kind of drifted our way down like we usually do. Well, the guy never left the spot because he was bringing them in one after the other, and so we never got to that spot. But we started doing the shoreline thing like we usually do instead of anchoring in the river. So my question to you on etiquette is, if you see a boat working a shoreline, is it okay to get downstream from that boat, the direction that they're going, and start fishing and start your drift? Right, how do you feel about that when that happens to you on the water?
I never want to cut anybody off, and you know, if it ever comes across that I cut somebody off, it was purely unintentional. I didn't either see the boat, or I didn't realize which way they were going. And if I realized I got in front of somebody, you know, say they're fishing down a shoreline and they come around a corner or whatever, I get out of there because it's just not worth it. You know, the lakes are big enough. We don't need to, you know, we don't need to cause any issues on the water. We're there to relax, for gosh sakes.
Yeah.
You know, go out, have a good time, and, you know, there's plenty of other good spots to go fishing. There's not just one.
Exactly. Well, when we were in the boat with my fishing buddy, I'm saying, okay, well, I guess we're not going to do this shoreline anymore, so we'll go to a different spot. And I said, I'll bet you that's a real young kid in that really fancy Ranger boat right there. And sure enough, we met up with him at boat landing. It was a young kid. He just didn't realize what he was doing. So I just wanted to get that out there. For everybody has to start somewhere, but just know that you share the water with a lot of people. Treat them the way you'd want to be treated. That goes anywhere, not only just in the boat.
Yeah, everything that you do in life, you know, treat others the way you want to be treated, and we'll get along fine.
Yeah, amen to that. Amen to that. Let's talk a little bit specifically with our opener now this weekend. Now we can't the muskie season. We got to wait a little while for that. But there's going to be a lot of guys out there. They may hook a muskie accidentally or something like that. So when you hook a muskie out of season, what's the best thing to do to make sure that fish is going to be safe?
Well, you know, you're probably going to be using lightweight spinning gear, so it's going to take a bit to get that fish into the boat. Just get it in the net, get the bait off it as quickly as possible. It doesn't bother me if you take a picture, you know, take a photo, but make it quick. Keep the fish's time out of water very minimal. As long as the fish is wet and in the lake, it's typically breathing. So I always leave the net in the water until I get the fish unhooked. You know, it's important to have unhooking tools. A needle nose pliers often won't do it with a muskie. You know, sometimes it's just a matter of reaching down with that needle nose pliers and plucking off a jig out of the corner of their mouth, and that's fine. But if they've got if they grab a Rapala, you know, I caught a 4-footer out of the Rainbow Flowage a few years back on a shad wrap, and he had the whole thing in his mouth. You know, I had to, you know, go in, and fortunately I had my unhooking tools with me. As I always carry them to my boat, and I was able to get them unhooked, safely and have a nice release. You just got to be prepared. It's important. Do not bring them in the boat except for the quick photo and then back in. As long as that fish is wet and its head is in the water, it's breathing, and that really goes a long way so far as releasing them.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the shad wrap hit on a muskie, because you'll pay, what, $7-$8 for a shad wrap these days. What is your thoughts on just, when I'm bass fishing, if the hook goes a little too deep, I'd rather just lose that hook. I'll cut the line, and I'm sure that hook is going to rust out in a few days, and it's not going to harm the fish at all. What's your advice on doing something like that, just cutting the line and leaving a shad wrap in the mouth?
I don't think that's such a good idea, because hooks nowadays are pretty good, and I've got to believe a lot of the fish are able to get rid of that bait, but I don't know how they can do it. You know, the hooks nowadays are made very, very well, and they just don't rust out. Rust takes a long time. I think it's always better to try to get the bait off the fish. You know, and typically it's not going to be way down the throat or anything. It's just going to be somewhere on the lips or somewhere in the mouth, and you can just, you know, reach in there, pluck it out with the pliers, and you got it.
Or at least, or have something to cut the hooks out, and so that you don't, reef on them too bad down there.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good things to know here. Steve Hiding's my guest here this morning. Just a couple of guys talking fishing here on the radio this morning. Steve, when I first moved to Eagle River, it was 1991, and I was a muskie fisherman big time. I couldn't wait to get up north and go for muskies every day after work. When I down in the Fox Valley, it was bass fishing after work, but moving to Vilas County in Eagle River, it was muskies after work. And then I accidentally caught my first 4-pound smallmouth, and then my muskie focus kind of went away, and I've really been focusing on those. But I can still remember, I walked into Betty's Eagle Cafe, if you remember back in the day in Eagle River.
Oh, yeah.
I saw Dick Rose was in there. Marv Elliott was in there. I think George Langley was at the table as well. When I saw those guys, I knew who they were without even meeting them. I thought, my gosh, look at me. I'm in the same place as these musky fishing legends. You still see any of those guys around anymore?
I talk to George periodically. Marv Elliott has passed.
Yeah.
Of course, Dick passed a long time ago.
Right, right.
But yeah, George is still around. He's still kicking. I've always gotten along great with George, and he's just a fantastic fisherman, and he's always been a gentleman to me. I always liked the guy.
Just curious, who were your heroes growing up when you really knew that fishing was going to be your thing? Who were the guys that you emulated and really respected?
Well, you know, it's hard not to like the Lindners, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Al and his late brother Ron, and of course, you know, James and the whole clan now. They're just, you know, first-rate individuals, first and foremost, and outstanding fishermen. And they've done so much to encourage the sport of fishing to the rest of us. You know, I've learned so much from the Lindners. And as I got older, you know, I got to know Joe Bucher. And, you know, Joe, it was very beneficial to me so far as helping me, you know, not only become a better muskie fisherman, but also kind of learn to navigate the fishing industry. You know, it's people like that. You know, another one, you know, and he was a friend of the Lindners, Roger LePenner up in Ashland. You know, I guided out of Roger's shop for many, many years up on Shawmigan Bay. And, you know, Roger, you know, Shawmigan Bay of Lake Superior has a 22-inch size limit on smallmouth bass, and right. That's because of Roger. And it's essentially catch and release, but that's okay. You know, it's maintained a world-class fishery in a very limited area. And so that's, you know, the people who are not afraid to take a stand in the interest of conservation and then also promote the sport, those are the ones that I try to emulate and the ones I respect the most.
Does Roger still have the Anglers All shop up there?
Anglers All is still there. Roger passed in 2017 or 2018,
oh,
I believe.
Gosh, I didn't know that.
He had some heart issues and then passed. And I still think about him. You know, every season, you know, I try to get up there and go fishing, and I still think about the guy.
Yeah.
And so, there were a lot of great fishermen have gone before us.
Boy, I tell you what, being able to talk to any of those guys one-on-one, I consider that a blessing. And I remember almost every single one of those conversations with a lot of those guys. And so, yeah, I'm missing a lot of those guys. Getting ready for this weekend, the fishing opener is coming up on Saturday. What's your best recommendation for guys going out? What should we be looking for? I was on the river last weekend, Steve. It was 49 when we put the boat in. It was 50 when we put the boat out. So water temperatures are still a little down. We haven't had a lot of really warm weather. So what is going to go into picking a good spot for Saturday?
I think the walleyes, for the most part, unless you're going to be fishing the big deep water lakes, you know, like twin or trout for walleyes, the walleyes are going to be post-spawn. And I was on the water yesterday fishing crappies, and, you know, I saw 48 degrees where I launched on a deeper bay, and then where I was fishing crappies, it was 51, 52 degrees, you know, shallow water bays. Crappie fishing wasn't that great, but we caught a few. So I think it's going to be a lot like it was last year on the opener, where if you know how to fish a jig and minnow in the weeds, you'll do very, very well. I think that's where the walleyes are going to be for the most part. They may be in some shoreline trees, you know, fallen trees. So if you know how to use a brush jig and how to fish it in the weeds and how to fish it around trees, you'll probably catch some fish. And, you know, we did very well last year on the opener. Don't go fishing where they spawn, because I fully anticipate they'll be done with that. Again, that will vary with some of the deeper lakes, you know, where the water's a little bit colder. But, you know, that high 40, low 50 degree water temperature, typically the walleyes are done. But they'll still bite. And, you know, last year we had a great opener. We caught a lot of walleyes, lots of perch, a couple nice northern pike. And you never know what, you know, you might run into some bass, you might run into a muskie that, you know, bites your jig and minnow. So I anticipate a fun opener. And if you can't catch them during the day, and one thing that's kind of looming is it looks like it's going to be post-frontal Saturday. We got rain, you know, it's ugly out there right now here in Minocqua. Tomorrow it's supposed to rain. Saturday, beautiful day. Typically that's going to make for tougher fishing. So if they don't bite during the day or the morning or during the day, you can always go out in the evening and throw stick baits, you know, big Rapalas, number 13 Rapalas, Smithwick Rattling Rogues up in the shallows. And if the lake's got a good walleye population, you'll catch them doing that too. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a flowage. The rainbow flowage, I've done it very well out there, successfully out there, but other lakes have got that bite too. And it's just a matter of going out in the evening, casting, you know, shoreline weeds, casting shoreline wood and rocks, and just keep fishing, and eventually you run into them. And that's a great way to catch a bunch of walleyes. And there's no finesse involved. Just, you know, cast and catch. That's all it is.
Yep, and if you get lucky, you got a good fish fry afterwards, too. And that's always a good thing. Smallmouth bass, just real quick, last topic here. I just love smallmouth bass fishing, Steve. I didn't know you had that background up on Shawamigan Bay. Maybe we can talk about that sometime down the road. But, you know, just curious about your take on this. Smallmouth bass used to be something that anglers got upset about when they caught them accidentally walleye fishing. Now the sport has just exploded. Largemouth bass has been around for a long time, but it seems the smallmouth is getting a lot more focus. The big-time guys, Zona and all those guys, they're zeroing in on smallmouth now. What do you make of that transition of a fish that was really never really sought out too much, but now it's like at the top of the list?
Yeah, I always thought, you know, back in the day before I really got into bass fishing, I kind of thought, well, we got a smallmouth, it's going to go on the stringer, it's not going to taste as good as the walleye, but it's going to be close. Now I haven't kept a smallmouth in, oh gosh, 25 years probably.
Yeah.
You look at the smallmouth is it tends not to be a very bright fish, but it's got an attitude. It's out there, you know, it's got a chip on its shoulder, and so they're more than willing to bite usually. And then they pull, you know, if they got as big as a muskie, you know, God help us. You know, we never get them in the boat.
Right.
And I think that's what's so much fun about it is they can be predictable. They usually will bite. They pull like crazy. And, you know, and they do get big. You know, a 20-inch smallmouth is, you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful fish. It takes them a long time to get that big. You know, we got to throw in the idea that, you know, if you want big smallmouths, you got to release the ones that are up and coming.
Yep.
I know one small lake up here that I used to catch a couple 20s out of every year, and I haven't for the last couple of years. And talking to a couple of the property owners along the shoreline as I'm fishing through, you know, they've got one guy singled out who moved to the lake who thinks he needs to put every one of them on the wall. And, you know, it's only a 150-acre lake that had a great smallmouth population. It still has smallmouths, but like I said, I haven't seen a 20, and the 18s are even rarer now. So you got to give those fish a chance to grow up. If you want a big smallie, you got to put them back. And obviously I'm a muskie guy, but a 20-inch smallmouth, you know, I've got a special spot in my heart for them.
Yeah, amen to that. There's nothing like a 20-incher. That's usually the goal, too, in my boat. Well, Steve, it's been great to talk. I didn't even get to half of the stuff I had in my notes here this morning. I could go on for another hour and a half. Hopefully, you feel the same way here this morning. But we're going to hear a lot from you. First report's going to hit the air tomorrow morning.
Yes, sir. I've got to put it together. When I hang up with you here, I'm going to write it up and record it and send it off to your way.
Good to talk to you today, Steve. We'll stay in touch through the season. Good luck to you and your boat this weekend and all season long, and we'll maybe see you on the water sometime.
Sounds great, Jeff, and wish everybody out there listening a great opener. Have fun, first and foremost, and I hope you get a nice fish fry to enjoy with your family at the end of the day.
Amen to that. Steve Heiding, Fishing Hall of Famer, with us this morning on the Sunrise Show. And